Hello and welcome to another edition of the Marlena program. This is the program for the week of Holy Cow, April 7th. We got a great program in store for you tonight. We have guests in both hours. Woohoo! So what I want you to do is kind of kick back and relax and join us for the next 2 hours right here on the Marlena program at the mainstream of ACB Radio. Well, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be listening to this program on whatever day you may be hearing it. And I'm Marlena, and I'll be with you for just about the next couple of hours. And what a couple of hours we're going to have. Let's get the housekeeping details out of the way, first of all, and then we'll get right down to it. If you're listening to this program at any time between 9 p.m. and 11 p.m. in the eastern part of North America, or 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. in the West, you're listening live on a Sunday night. Or if you're listening from 1 to 3, I said get that mixed up there, 1 to 3 UTC, like I say every week, what the heck are you doing up? But you're also listening live on a very early Monday morning over there in UTC land. So if you're listening during these times, please feel free to give us a call. We'll be opening up the line soon. The telephone number is the same, 866-666-7926. If you're listening any other time, just put your feet up, relax, and enjoy the program. Well, I'm very excited about tonight's program, and I hope that you will be too. My first guest is someone whom I have just recently come to know by email correspondence, and I'll be telling you about him in just a moment. In the second hour, we will bring a very familiar voice and friend to ACB Radio, a longtime friend of mine, and that's past president of the American Council of the Blind and current CEO, if that's not his title, I just made it that way, of Bay Area Digital, and that's Chris Gray. And Chris will be joining me here in the studio, which is really a very messy room in my house. He'll be joining me here live to tell us what's up with Bay Area Digital and all of the devices that he is working on. And I tell you what, I saw some at CSUN, and they are pretty darned cool. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, my first guest is Lawrence Utenier. And Lawrence contacted ACB Radio and told us a bit about him. And I was just delighted to finally have a date that would work for him and work for me. I don't even know where to start to tell you about Lawrence. He is an avid fisherman. He is an absolute genius with developing technologies that are useful for blind fishermen, but not only technologies in that arena. He's developed the web for all, which I'm going to ask him to explain and tell us about. But helping to access the web for all persons. He has, and this I find fascinating, and I would love to do a show on this alone. He has lived with some of the native peoples, including the Inuit, whom I find particularly to be fascinating, to learn about their experiences with disability before contact with the outside world, if you will. So please help me make welcome a man with many facets and of many talents, Lawrence Utenier. Hey, Lawrence, welcome to Marlena.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Now, tell us where you are. You're somewhere in Canada.
I'm in Canada's capital city,
Ottawa.
Ottawa's just on the border of the provinces of Ontario and Quebec.
Ah, mes grands-parents de Trois-Rivières, Québec.
Oui, oui.
Yeah. So
that's very good.
Yeah, well, I used to speak it very fluently, but you know, when I was a kid, my grandparents didn't. They were bilingual, but they were more Fringlish than English. You know.
So, oh yeah, we get a lot of that around here.
Yeah, so I learned a lot of French, but you know, I'm old now and I've forgotten most of it. And tell us a little bit about you. Let's kind of start off with that. I like to kind of do a little bit of biography. Have you been blind from birth?
I was registered blind at age 8, and for some unknown reason, my eyesight started to deteriorate in the center and then spread out. I went to the Baskin-Palmer Institute and a bunch of places. No one could ever put their finger on exactly why it was happening. And then by the age around 20, my early 20s, I started to learn to do things without looking, because it deteriorated to a point where I had to either get a white cane or a guide dog. So I got a guide dog. And,
yay!
And yeah.
My guide dog is glad to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, they don't live as long as we do.
I know.
But that's okay. It still gives you a good excuse to have a dog.
That's right. So, and where were you educated?
I was fortunate that when I did go, when I was registered blind, our province and our school system normally at that point would have put me in the school for the blind, and it was a residential school here in the province. But for whatever reason, my principal decided that he said to me, as long as I could get along, I could stay. So I stayed in the regular school system in Georgetown, Ontario, and then went on to college and did a 2-year degree in rehabilitation counseling, and then was told that I really needed more education if I wanted to work in that field. So I went and got a double major in psychology and sociology. I was told then that if I really wanted to be a counselor, I had to get a master's degree. So then I went on and I started diversifying at that point. I went and did a master's in environmental studies. And that allowed me to sort of specialize on the built environment. I really wanted to explore how we create environments that we live in that are accessible, and all the factors that influence that.
Well, that's very fascinating. Now, talk to us a little bit. I mean, I certainly understand the built environment, but there may be some folks who don't really understand what that term means. Describe the built environment.
Well, when you think about the environment, everyone always thinks about trees, grass, lakes, water, skies, climate change, and so on. But there's also the built environment. Now, that's the cities that we build, the streets, the houses, the office buildings, the roads, and all of that. Anything that, you know, we as humans sort of conceive and develop, and how that influences the way we live our lives. A bridge, you know, over a river, over a ravine, can change, you know, forever the way we live.
What do you think about roundabouts? Do you have those in Canada?
Yeah, we're getting them. We're getting them. You know, personally, I haven't walked through any of those yet, but I think from an environmental perspective, they're a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't comment any further than that because I haven't really had a chance to walk through.
Well, wait until you do.
Well, there's two types. There's circles and there's roundabouts, and apparently the roundabouts are better than the circles. I from what I understand, they're,
well, I think the roundabouts are better in that. Only in that they slow the vehicles down, but the vehicles don't have to stop.
No.
And that's the scary part. They rely on sighted people waving down the vehicles that are coming. I won't prejudice you. I'll let you
and mix some hybrid quiet cars
that's
into the
right.
mix, and
you've
got
right.
yourself a real great situation.
That's right. Oh, I knocked off another blink today.
We were protesting, me and John Ray from the Advocates for Quality Blind Canadians. We were protesting the car show here in Ottawa last weekend.
Good job.
Yeah, we had some placards up. You know, we were in some of these sandwich boards and some noisemakers and so on.
Good.
I almost got
job.
Arrested at one spot.
Oh, I wish you had. That would have been cool.
We thought about it, but there was no media around, so it would have been pointless. Right?
Oh, yeah, darn. That wouldn't have been fun then, definitely.
No.
Yeah. Well, now, one of your very keen interests is fishing. And talk to me about that. Why fishing? Did you fish when you could see, or is this something that you...
I don't know. It's something I grew up doing, and I think it was part of my childhood. My dad wasn't an avid fisherman, but he bought some fishing tackle, and he did take us fishing. And then I think when I was in grade 3 and I was registered blind, I had, you know, there was some issues in the school system where the other kids, you know, kids at that age, they don't accept difference that easily. And I went from being a very popular kid to being sort of an outcast.
Mm-hmm.
But I did manage to hang on to a small group of friends who were really interested in the outdoors. So we chummed out. We went fishing every day after school. So I, you know, where I wasn't maybe Mr. Popularity, I did have some friends, and we did do quite a few things like that. And I kept going on that. Now, mind you, having to leave a small town because of the lack of transportation, go to college, university, think about a career. You know, I was offered a position as a blind piano tuner's apprentice, but I decided against that. So, you know, you give up those sort of hobbies and you get on with your life. You get to, you know, go to school, buy a house, get a job, all that stuff, have kids, you know. And but I always, you know, I kept fishing going and with the kids and so on. And I'm back at it more and more so over the last number of years and applying some of the things I've learned over my career and work and life and so on to the sport. But I think the main thing what keeps me coming back to fishing and why I like it so much is because really when you're fishing with people, whether they're sighted or not, you really have a lot in common in that you're all pursuing something you can't see.
Huh.
And there's very little fishing where you can actually see the fish, right?
Sure, yeah, because they're trying for you not to see them.
Exactly. I mean, they're hiding.
Yeah.
They're hiding, and you don't even know if they're there or not. And 80% of the water has no fish in it. So you've got to find the fish. Then you've got to try to attract them to bite a hook, you know, and then you've got to get them into the boat. And that's the first time you actually see them is when you get them close to the boat or the shore or whatever. You know, treat them well, let them go, hopefully catch them again someday. But it's really, you know, we're all, sighted or not, we're all using technology to try to find and catch those fish.
Interesting. Tell me about the technology that you use. Clearly, I know that sighted people use colored, whatever you call them, bobbing things. I'm obviously not a fisherwoman.
We'll have to take care of that someday.
Yeah. Oh, I did it once, and as long as I didn't have to bait the hook or touch the fish, it was okay.
Yeah.
But tell me about your technology.
Well, you know, I mean, they're simple things, right? Like you mentioned hooks and lures and things like that, and trying to organize all that. I have no problem with hooks. They're not dangerous. If you're careful, and blind people usually are very careful, I think, with their hands. So, I mean, you don't get pricked easily. And I've never had a real bad hook, so that knock on wood, where the barb's gone into my skin.
Mm-hmm.
I poked myself a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a good rod, if you look at all the fishing manufacturers, they all sell rods, and they all say, my rod gives the best sensitivity. You know, it puts the best, you can feel a fish burp. You know, some of them claim, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're all claiming to use the senses of touch. And that's just amazing that all these fishing rod manufacturers are focusing on the sense of touch.
Huh.
So, I mean, who's the better person to try these fishing rods out and see which ones are working well? So that's, I'm having some fun with that. So simple things like that, rods, reels, lures, you know, just getting that organized is always a challenge. Oh, and then, you know, the fishermen love to have those depth finders and fish finders. So I'm working on talking depth finders and so on. Top water sonar. It's nice to know where you are and where you're going and what's in front of you. Then there's some advantages and disadvantages to using technology in a boat to navigate. And I think I have invented the first fishing boat that a person without sight can drive and get back
Yes.
That's the main thing. You want to get back.
Yes, and I definitely want you to describe that, the blind fishing boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's you know, there's, like I said, there's some advantages and disadvantages being in a boat. One is it's not like a sidewalk where you can feel the edges. You can be turning in any particular direction, and you won't even know it.
Yeah.
So you've got to have a talking compass, and because even GPS, unless you're moving and you've moved a good 10 feet in one direction, it's not
mm-hmm.
going to tell you which way you're moving.
Mm-hmm.
So a good compass is a good helper.
Mm-hmm.
And then having something in front to identify if there's anything in front of you. Now, my blind fishing boat is a 12-foot porta boat. It's plastic, weighs about 70 pounds. It's quite stable. I power it with a Minn Kota electric trolling motor that's very quiet. And I have, and thanks to Porta Boat and Minn Kota for that, they're helpful in that stuff. And then Sendero, Mike May.
Sure.
He's provided me with some mini guides he sells. And I put those on the front of the boat, and I hook those up to some stereo computer speakers that I just leave under the middle seat.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I get left and right sort of and center range, so I can detect things. They're good for about 50 feet. And on a slightly wavy day, you get a little bloop, bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop, bleep, as the waves come in, as it picks up the wave tops. But it's you can, you know, if there's a raft or a canoe or something, that'll be a more of a steady signal, and the closer you get, the faster that beeps. And then I use some automobile reverse sensors. They're quite popular and cheap and easy to install.
Now, are they like the things in my husband's car?
Exactly.
Ah. Yeah.
You know, then they beep slow when you're 10
yep.
feet, and they
yep.
start speeding up the closer you get.
So, that's what you don't want to hear.
Yeah. Beep, 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 beep. You know you're within 2 or 3 feet. Then.
You better stop.
Yeah, exactly. And those work well for docking. I find the automobile reverse sensors work well for docking and for coming alongside another boat. I use trying out different GPS systems, talking GPS, so on, and looking forward to getting my hands on a system that does tracks. Garmin, some of these more elaborate fish chart plotters, so
mm-hmm.
on, they use GPS as well, and they create actual tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And a company in Australia's made me a system that'll beep so I can stay on that with those tracks with the Garmin that I'm going to have on board. I've gone to a slightly bigger boat. I've got a 20-foot power catamaran, and Evan Root and a local marina here, Laurentian Marine, have sponsored me with a an outboard motor for that boat and for the next 5 years. So they're helping me develop this
Open
whole new
line.
System. It's great that the automobile or the marine electronics have adopted a new standard, so all the different electronics will talk to each other over a network
yeah.
cable.
Okay.
And you can capture that. I'm working on with a company here, CompuSalt, to capture that signals over the network cable so I can listen to my speed, direction, depth, GPS signal, all of that.
That is fascinating, absolutely fascinating. So you effectively are able to pilot the boat independently and, as you say, get back independently.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Just don't forget to create your point of interest when you're leaving the dock. Not at the dock. Not
yeah.
at the dock. But once you're a little bit off the dock, you want to create your point of interest.
Yeah, that would really help.
And then I go out with a sighted person. I create my map of the lake. And then I have those thermal swell paper. I have one of those swell paper printers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I get them to sketch out a map, and then we mark the points on that. And that's waterproof paper, so that's great stuff to have in your pocket. It always lets you know sort of roughly where you are, you know, in
mm-hmm.
relation to your waypoints.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, even things like that, a lead line, the old-fashioned lead line, it gives you a quick feel for what's down there. You can feel if it's rocks or sand or muck or whatever with that lead line.
That
so
is...
there's a...
That's absolutely fascinating. We've just opened the lines, and the number to call, of course, is 866-666-7926. My guest tonight is Lawrence Utenier. He'll be with us here in the first hour, and we're currently talking about his innovations on the blind fishing boat, and we'll be right back after these words. This program is brought to you by HumanWare, advocates for Braille literacy, and manufacturers of the Braille Note M-Power. For more information on the Braille Note and other fine HumanWare products, visit them on the web at www.humanware.com or call HumanWare at 1-800-722-3393.
You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. Call Marlena now at 1-866-666-7926. That's toll-free, 1-866-666-7926.
Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page at www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. And your listening is definitely our business. 866-666-7926. Anything else that you're working on with respect to the blind fishing boat? No, you sound just fine here. You mean like the magic fish lore and all that stuff? Yeah. Not to mention any names, yeah. I see some of this stuff on the Home Shopping Network, and I wonder.
You need to turn your patch on. I mean, you need to turn on the board.
You need to be the best there is. So what really does work? Before you spend your money.
And you know what? Before I let you continue, I need to apologize to you and to the listeners. I forgot to push the right button on the board here. So we're gonna pretend that we just came back from the break, and we'll say what we just said. So why don't you talk about the different ways to fish again? Because nobody got a word of that.
Okay. Well, you know what? I just wanted to say that one of the things I'm writing a lot about on my website, blindfishingboat.com, is different ways of fishing. And there's a ton of different fishing techniques out there, a lot of different species of fish. And the fishing equipment industry has really gone a long way to specialize for all of these different techniques and species. So which ones work best for fishers with limited or no sight?
Mm-hmm.
Which ones are probably want to avoid?
Mm-hmm.
Which stuff, you know, doesn't really work at all. I'm not a field tester, but in my fishing trip reports, I do always talk about the types of techniques, the type of equipment I'm using, who makes it, why I chose that specific style or brand of equipment or that technique of fishing, and why it's sort of useful for someone with limited or no sight to use that type
mm-hmm.
of technology or
mm-hmm.
technique.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that is really fascinating. And we did have a call, but the caller hung up. So please feel free to call us back, caller, at 866-666-7926. Can we talk about Web for All for a minute?
Sure.
What is that?
Well, I was working on a program here for the Government of Canada. And it was to make Canada the most connected nation in the world, which we were for several years. I think we slipped down a few points from there now. But the whole idea, you know, back in the before the dot-com crash,
mm-hmm.
was to get everyone using the internet, and everything was going to happen over the internet. So one of the programs I developed on the side was something to make sure people with disability and people with literacy issues also could use the internet. And you know, the big issue there was, how do you get the assistive technology into the hands of people who can't afford it or who don't have any experience with it, who would like just to try it out? And we were doing things in community centers, schools, libraries, things like that. We had all our libraries connected and all our schools connected, goals like that. So what I did is I worked with different companies to get very low-cost versions of their software, introductory type assistive technology. And then I worked with some other companies to develop a way of putting that all on one computer, not so it all runs at once, because that is a disaster.
Yes.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
But to make a way of identifying what it is you want, how you want it set up, you know, whether it's speech rate, or font size, background color, foreground color, so on and so forth, left-hand mouse, right-hand mouse, onboard keyboard, you name it. There was hundreds and thousands of choices you could have, and it all depended on which tree, root of the tree you went down, and to determine the other choices that would come up. Once you've made those choices, you could save them on a little credit card device, and then from then on, anytime you went to one of these Web for All systems, and we set up 1,000 of them across Canada, you could just put your card into the card reader.
The
card
cool.
reader would say, oh, you want the computer to be like this. Boom, do it. And then you would have your software up there.
Very
your
cool.
Set up just the way you want it. You even took you to a little portal where you could save your favorites. And then when you were done, you took your card out of the card reader, and the computer went back to being just a regular computer.
Very interesting. We have a call. Let's bring them on in, and I will push the button. Hello there. You're with Lawrence and Marlena. Who's this?
Good evening, guys. Long time no here.
Is this Timothy?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Timothy, up there in Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
Good. How you doing, Timothy?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
See, Timothy, you always tell me I need to have a Canadian on the program. Now, here we are.
We got one.
Yeah. Did you have a question?
This boat, I saw in an email, it was like 40-some-odd feet.
No. No, it's 12. I've got two. The one is 12 feet long, and the other one is 20.
Oh. I got my wires crossed then somewhere.
Maybe you're thinking of one of these sailboats for the blind that
recently
launched.
Yeah, that's
what
it is. Yeah. That's a very popular sport, the sailing for the blind. Now, I think there's 8 or 9 different countries around the world that have some built blind sailing teams, and we have one in Canada, I believe, and one in the States as well, and so on. And
now, what about this, Timothy? Is this something you think you'd ever like to give a whirl, doing some fishing? And
at some point I'd like to, but, you know, I'm going to Edmonton in 6 weeks, so.
Now, Lawrence, do you make opportunities for folks to use the boat and kind of experiencing it?
Well, there's a tournament here they've been holding in Ontario called the Blind Anglers International Tournament. And I brought my boat last year there for the first time. Now, the way this normally works is they have professional fishermen come with their, you know, fancy $60,000 bass boats. And each of those guys takes out a couple fishers with limit or no sight.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a one-day tournament, which boat lands the biggest and biggest fly fish.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
So I was the first one, the first blind person ever actually show up with their own boat.
With their own boat, yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, I had to convince these guys with their $60,000 boats that I wasn't going to be a hazard to them.
Isn't that ironic when they're at a blind anglers tournament and you have to convince them that you can that you're cool?
I bet it is hard to convince them.
What's that, Timothy?
I bet it is hard to convince some people, though.
Well, they didn't want me to ram into them, and they didn't want to flip me over, because their boats are, you know, they do 70, 80 miles an hour, and my boat does 5 miles an hour.
Well, yeah, so, they can catch us pretty quite easy then.
Yeah, so they left all before me, and then I went out right after, And then coming back, they didn't care. We just all came back. You know, we all had to get back by 3 o'clock, so we all got back. And, I actually towed one guy, and it was pretty funny.
Oh, that's
cool.
His
battery died.
Tell us that story. Hey, Timothy, thanks for calling.
No problem.
Okay. All right, bye-bye. Tell us that story. I want to hear this.
Well, the guy, his battery died. He was using his electric trolling motor, and then his battery died. He couldn't start his gas motor, so I cruised up, and I said, come on, give me a rope. I'll tow you into the blind guy sitting in front. Threw me a rope. I hooked it up to my boat. Well, I tell you, the guy was not going to have me tow. I just was towing him. I almost had him all the way in, and he had the cover off his gas motor, had a rope around the motor, and he was pulling it over my hand. He finally got it going, so I let him go.
Oh, that's funny. That is
and
so
funny.
And
I did catch one bass boat. You know, when you're casting your lures, you always wait for that kerplunk as it hits the water. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So this time I hear a ka-tunk.
Uh-oh.
And I said, what the heck is that? And I hear some guy about 50 feet away go, a bass boat. So I gave my rod tip a little twitch and not pop my lure off his boat and kept fishing.
That's funny. Well, you know, the one time that I've been in a sailboat, I was actually learning a little bit about how to sail. I mean, in no way am I an expert in this, and no way did I really learn a lot because it was just one experience. But I really enjoyed it, and according to the people teaching me, I got the hang of it pretty darn quickly. And so the guy teaching me said, "Okay, we're coming up about 20 feet away is another boat." And so I looked over, I said, well, where? On the left? He said, yeah, on the left side.
On port?
On the port side. So I looked to my port and I said, blind sailor. And they just started laughing. And he said, she's not kidding.
And you can always remember the port and starboard sign. You can be left at port. But you can't be left at starboard. Right?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
There's a little saying for you.
That's right. That's right.
If anyone remembers, yeah.
Yeah.
But being on the water is an amazing thing. And if you, Timothy there, he comes from a long, you know, a fishing community. I'm just assuming that Nova Scotianers were famous for fishing on those foggy, you know, foggy coastlines.
Yeah.
Rocky, sort of, you know, very dangerous, where there's thousands of shipwrecks. And to not be able to navigate in those fogs when you can't see anything, a lot of those fishermen were driving their little boats, their little dories around, just by the feel of the waves and how close the waves were spaced apart, how the frequency of the waves, the direction of the waves, the wind, the smell of land. They were using all of those senses when their eyesight was of no use to them. And they could get in and out of harbor, no problem, using their other senses. So there's a lot to be learned from people that, you know, spend time on the water that, and you can do it. I mean, there's a lot of websites that deal with navigating at night, boats at night, you know,
mm-hmm.
and when you're out there at night, there's no street lights.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate at night?
Yeah.
And I think some of the technology I'm developing will help those people.
Well, you know, it's interesting you should say that. You know, Gary, whom we call Gary the Board Guy, my husband, Gary and I cruise as often as we can. We're of the age where we're semi-retired, and whenever we can and can afford it, we take a cruise. And I have often stood on either the deck or our cabin's balcony at night and just realized the difference in the sounds around me. I mean, it sounds, the water sounds different at night to me. And I never appreciated until I began cruising that the water at night is black. It's just, you can't see anything. And I never really thought about that until one night we were sitting on our balcony having a glass of wine or something. And I said, well, what does it look like out there? And Gary said, I don't know. It's black. I can't see anything. It's black. It's just.
Oh, yeah. And if no moon?
Yeah.
No moon?
Yeah, there was no moon.
You're not going to see anything.
It's almost a complete absence of light.
We had a shipwreck here a couple of years ago. A passenger ferry cruising down the west coast of Canada along the BC coast, and the two officers that were in the pilot house that were supposed to be navigating the boat, apparently they had been carrying on some sort of relationship. And they were having a fight, and they weren't paying attention.
Oh, dear.
And the boat hit an island, and it sank. And 97 people got off, but two people were never seen again.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, and they're pretty sure the two officers aren't saying what happened. They won't talk for fear of being persecuted.
Sure,
so they're
yeah.
just keeping their mouths shut.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're saying probably, you know, the radar did flash a notice on the radar screen
yeah.
saying, you know, obstacle ahead, but... Maybe if they had used some other technology, some of the talking technology I'm working on, you know, that could have been avoided. It's an unfortunate situation, but you know, it just goes to show you that you do need to have multi-sensory type of stimulation when it comes to things like that.
Well, you know, I recently had an opportunity to fly a 757 simulator.
Oh,
and
yeah?
They have a lot of talking technology.
Well, exactly. I mean, pilots don't just count on their eyesight.
No,
I mean, the cockpit fills with smoke. They get a little dozy, you know, a long flight
yeah.
or whatever. They want to have some audio stuff going on there.
Well, it's interesting because when I was arriving close to SeaTac, which is my airport, it would tell me, it would say, I don't remember exactly, but like SeaTac, outer loop, and then SeaTac, inner, because there's apparently an outer perimeter and then an inner perimeter for the airport. And then if you're not landing correctly, it'll say, pull up.
Wow.
Or if you're ascending too rapidly, it will say level. And
mm-hmm.
it's really quite startling. It's a female voice in the one that I had, and it was very startling. You would have to truly not be listening to miss it. And so I think that multi-sensory technology is perhaps used more than we who are blind may stop and think about, really.
Well, you know, I think one of the, you know, getting back to just using your senses again, and without even technology, I always thought, well, you know, as a blind person, without being able to see the land at all, how do you know when you're close to land, you know, when you're about to hit the
yeah.
Or, you know, you always want to fish along the shorelines and the weed beds and so on, not out in the middle of the lake necessarily. So, but you know what? You can hear that. You can smell that. And whether it's you hear the birds or the frogs or the other, you know, water life and land life, or whether you can smell the weeds or the different sounds of the echo off the bulrushes of your voice once you get in some of those bays, you know, those small bays. There's so many different ways of smelling and hearing your environment. The other nice thing about being out in the water fishing is there's just not a lot around. I mean, navigating sidewalks and buildings and shopping malls and schools and stuff, there's just a billion obstacles
yeah.
and they're all moving around you all the time.
Yeah.
When you're on the water, it's pretty much open. You know, there's not a lot going on there unless you're in a really busy waterway, a recreational waterway. There's not a lot going on. So you can be much more relaxed. And I just love being out on the water and just enjoying the peace and quiet, the smells, the sounds. You know, it's fishing. It's not catching, right? So
mm-hmm.
you're not always catching fish.
Mm-hmm.
And but you are, it's just, you get into a different zone. And it can be a real experience. It's I find it quite exhilarating.
Have you ever been scared?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you manage your risks, and as long as you know you're managing your risks, you know, fear can be managed. It's not, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I remember when I still could see, you know, I'd be a mile or two offshore and I wouldn't see the shore anymore, and everyone else could still see the shore until 12, maybe 15 miles before it drops
mm-hmm.
below the horizon,
because
the world is round, so even, you know, things 15 miles away on the water, you don't see anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But now I don't see anything, so I can be, you know, 100 feet offshore or 100 miles offshore. For me, it's the same thing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder sometimes where you are. But I'm, you know, with a compass and the GPS, and I carry a VHF radio, handheld VHF radio, and,
mm-hmm.
and I always leave one on shore
mm-hmm.
with my partners in case something's coming up. And that also has the weather band that alerts me to weather announcements. And,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you're in an area where that service is available, but no, there's and then you hear boats coming. You wonder, I wonder if he sees me.
I hope he sees me.
I guess he saw me. That's always makes a little bit of getting used to.
Do you have anything on the fishing boat itself that would warn other boaters, that alert them to the fact that you're blind?
I have on each side of the boat, you know, the decals of different sponsors, and I have my own
mm-hmm.
decal as the primary one. It's blind fishing boat, so those three words,
mm-hmm.
and I think that says it all.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't. I thought about it, and I still haven't come up with the sort of something. I think maybe, you know, those little reverse tones that when, you know, cars are backing up,
mm-hmm.
vans, things like that. You know,
mm-hmm.
they make the little beep, beep, beep.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe I might put one on the front, a real quiet one, just a direction one pointing in front, just to make sure if something is in front of me, a person or something, they know something's coming at them
mm-hmm.
that doesn't necessarily see them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's sort of
mm-hmm.
a universal sound now.
Mm-hmm.
And that could help. But there really isn't an identifier other than strapping a big monster white cane onto my boat.
you could get one of those new ultra canes, you know, with the sonar.
I've tried those.
I've
tried a lot of the different sonars.
Yeah,
let me tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there may be people listening to this who will sit there and say, well, you know, he's just really amazing, but I could never do this. I mean, I couldn't do it. And not that everyone has to become a fisherman or a sportsman or whatever, but just the idea of daring to try and daring to create. You know, if something isn't accessible, what can I do to make it accessible? Because I want to do it. Where does that come from within you?
I think I like to do things, and I like to, I like to always. It's easy, I think, if you can't see for your boundaries to get very close, almost to the point where you can touch them and you remember them, and you know they become a very tactile audio sort of those boundaries and. You don't really push them out. And I like to always push my boundaries out and beyond my comfort zone and stretch my comfort zone, whether it's my neighborhood or I'm working or going to a meeting in some far off place. I just wrote an article. You can get it on my website. It's called Navigating the High Arctic. And I was up for a week on Baffin Island in the Arctic Circle there.
Oh,
for
my
meetings.
Gosh.
And, you know, they don't have streets or sidewalks, right? They're just houses and buildings scattered around in a community, and it's all just hard packed down snow. And the cars and trucks, they sort of, you know, meander between the buildings kind of on sort of general paths.
Yeah.
Snowmobiles have general paths.
Yeah.
But people who walk just sort of walk along the edges of those paths or just cut direct from point to point. So it's really like there's nothing there to give a blind person any information of where they are. I remember interviewing part of my research once quite a few years ago an Inuit person who was blind living on the coast of the Arctic Ocean in a community called Tuktoyaktuk, and it was this August and so all the snow was gone. It was just gravel, but all the houses were just built on gravel, and there was no streets, no sidewalks, nothing. And I said, Sam, you know, we spent 2 days. I was recording his memories about what it was like to be, you know, what he remembered about being disability and people he knew with disabilities before white people came to the community. And afterwards, he said, I want to take you to the Hudson's Bay store. And I said, well, do you use a white cane? He goes, no, I use a hockey stick. He said, white canes are no good. They break off in the snow.
Oh, my gosh.
And I didn't take my dog with me to that community because I was told there's a lot of dogs running around loose, and huskies can be pretty nasty, some of them, and they like to fight. And the last thing I needed was my dog getting chewed up.
Yeah.
So Sam and I left the house, and he had his hockey stick, and we were just arm in arm walking along the gravel, and there's not a lot going on, so there's no audio clues. Like, there's no street sounds, right?
Yeah.
And we're walking and talking and talking, walking, and all of a sudden I hear this van or car coming up behind us and pulls up beside us, and the guy says, and the van, he says, hey, Sam, where are you going? And Sam says, oh, we're going to the Hudson's Bay store. And he goes, Sam, you better get in the van. You're heading out of town. I mean, we could have been lost out there in the tundra, right? So we get in the van, we turn around, go back into town. But, you know, thankfully that guy, you know, saw us heading out of town. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We had no
or you, or you and I might not be doing this right now.
Well, exactly. And I was up in, like I said, just a couple, 4 weeks ago doing the same thing, and all those memories came back to me. And I thought, well, it's a good thing I brought some of my technology with me, my tracker I had with me, and my talking compass. So I started making waypoints and using that to navigate this community again, just like I was. I was a one-man boat. I had the dog with me. And, you know, just navigating around this little community. And people would stop, and they'd offer me rides all the time. And, you know, sometimes I'd take them, sometimes, no, I'm just fine, you know, walking along. But yeah, you know, you don't meet a lot of blind people living in those communities because they're really, there hasn't been much for them to stay in those communities. But you wonder, you know, in the wintertime when it's dark all for 3 months, and when they're in a storm, how do people get around and not get lost?
Exactly. You know, I'd love to have you come back on and talk about the Inuit and what was the other tribe that I read?
They're Inuit and there's Inuvialuit and, you know, there's a few of them up there. Yeah, there's different. Yeah, over the Dene Native people.
Well, I especially remember the Inuit tribe because I used to listen to a shortwave radio station that came from Frobisher Bay.
Mm-hmm. That's where I was.
Yeah. And we have a call. Let's bring them on in. Hi there. You're with Lawrence and Marlena. Who's this?
This is the Wango de Tango Man.
Oh, the Wango de Tango Man. Hey.
I've got my cast iron skillet already.
Oh, well,
I'm
now.
To black and a catch, so.
Are you on a speakerphone?
I'm on Skype.
Oh, you're on Skype. Oh, it sounds horrible. But anyway.
That ain't better?
That's much better.
All right.
Oh, that's better.
So you ready to blacken some catfish?
No, man, I'm talking about maybe some snapper.
That's what I was curious about,
Lawrence. Where do you, you said when you go offshore and stuff to fish. Are you on the Pacific, the Atlantic, Great Lakes, where?
Well, right here I'm on the my main body of water here is the Ottawa River.
Okay.
But there's a lot of it's like I'm in, you know, in the middle of a million lakes here, and some are big, some are small. I'm not far from Lake Ontario, but mostly with the smaller boat I go into some of these really small bodies of water, you know, that are maybe 1 to 5 miles in size. And so I can't get, even if I got really lost, I can't get that lost, you know?
Exactly.
And, but with the bigger boat, I'll be going into some of the bigger bodies of water now. But I won't be driving that, 20-foot power cat around with the 115-horsepower Evinrude on the back by myself. I'll have a sighted co-pilot. And he'll be using a system that we got from AutoTether, great company here. It's a wireless tether kill switch system. So if I fall over, the motor stops. If he falls out of the boat, an alarm will go off. So I'll know my sighted pilot's gone. And,
and then what are you going to do about it?
Well, he can press a button on his little remote and stop my motor, too, if I'm coming back for him too fast.
Okay. That is fascinating. Cool. Well, you know, let me tell you who you're speaking to here, Lawrence. This is another just a very creative and innovative gentleman who, it's the first time I've ever called you a gentleman. What is wrong with me?
But, girl, you're slipping.
I'm slipping.
People are going to get the wrong impression of me.
I know they're going to think I actually like you. this is Dale Campbell who provides a program which we air, and it's also provided on various radio reading services around the country called Cooking in the Dark.
Dale, yes. I was a big fan of yours for a number of years there. I got a lot of tips. You know,
there you go.
I accumulated a lot of recipes. I appreciate that.
There you
Fantastic.
Go.
Fantastic. The recipes are still flying, man. That list is, it has become it's become its own entity now.
Oh, yeah. Like, at some point I had to say, well, look, Lawrence, how many more thousands of recipes for,
need? I mean, you can only make so many recipes in a lifetime, right?
I know it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right.
I got my
yeah.
favorites and,
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Yeah, we're on the Canadian reading radio service up there too. We air on
VoiceSprint.
I believe Sundays at noon.
Is that VoiceSprint?
Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure is.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Now what are your primary fish that you catch?
Well, around here we get a lot of there's trout. We have trout lakes. We have pike. Bass. And walleye. I think walleye are probably some of the best eating fish around.
Yes. And walleye, now you've got to know you probably know you have a walleye on the line when you get it.
Yeah, they have a different way of fighting. They don't jump, but they're real bruisers. They love to dive and go deep and, give their head, you feel their head shaking down there and, they can get up to 12, 15 pounds.
I guess you use like steel leaders and stuff.
For the pike, you know, we call them the toothy critters.
Yes.
And they can snap off your line, so you have to be careful. If you're fishing in pike water and you think that you're going to get a lot of pike action, you want to use some strong leader material between your monofilament or braid and the hook or the lure itself. We also have species of fish here called the muskellunge, and this is probably one of the best musky fishing areas in the world. And those are they're real predator fish. They're tough, very tough, very toothy, very strong fish, and quite a prize. Now, people
now,
throw
they,
them back.
Are they good eating also?
Most people don't catch them because they're not good eating and they're pretty rare. So
okay.
You throw them back. They get up to about 50 inches long.
Wow.
Kind of like when I was younger, I grew up in Missouri, and the Lake of the Ozarks was our body, and of course we had crappie, bass, but gar were kind of the big predatory junk fish, you'd hate to find those on your trot line because they were just full of teeth and just nasty, but basically we'd pull them and cut their throats or throw them, just eliminate them if we could because they were such a predatory fish.
Yeah, people fish for them. They don't even use hooks. You just use a bunch of a wool material, some colored wool yarn, and you put that on the end of your lure, and they actually get their teeth tangled in it.
Oh, that's not good.
Well, their mouths are so bony that a hook will never penetrate it, right? So
I know, but I can't imagine being pulled out of the water by my teeth.
People think, well, what do these fish feel when they're biting into a hook? But if you look at the fish, the other fish these bigger fish are eating, and their spines that they have on their dorsal fins and their gill plates and the other, so I mean the fish they're eating for breakfast, lunch, and dinner have more sharp points on them than any fishing lure I have in my tackle box. And they eat and swallow these things, right? So, I mean, they're quite used to getting, to eating pointy things and not feeling the pain. Otherwise, they wouldn't eat them.
I always thought about catfish. I mean, if they were bitten to a catfish once, I'm thinking, man, because it didn't matter how careful I was. If we caught a mesh of catfish, I was sure to get horned once or twice.
Exactly.
Those crazy things. But down here, we're on the bay and such, so... It's always interesting to hear about what different fishermen have, I guess, in their waters near them. Because, here we've got, of course, redfish, and you know, we've got sand trout and speckled trout and flounder in season, and of course the occasional shark or something. But if we go offshore, we can get into some mahi or dolphin fish, whatever you want to call it, Dorado. But it's all a lot smaller. I know when we go on vacation this year, we go down to St. Croix every year, and for my anniversary, my wife got me the fishing trip I've been wanting for a while with a captain. And in reading his website, the marlin will be the fish that will be running while we're down there.
Oh, wow. You're a lucky man. I've tried for those marlin before in Mexico and the sailfish, and wasn't lucky, but hope you have.
Yeah, it may just be a long, you know, it just might be a nice boat ride, but then again, it might be an endurance test, too. I'm hoping for the latter for sure.
Yeah. That those long trolls, eh?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, as long as the boat keeps running and there's cold beer in the cooler, I'm good. Let's go.
I hear you. You know,
I was on your website reading about your boat, and man, I like the different contraptions and the different items, the adaptive equipment that you
add. Yeah, it's really fascinating stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice. The backup sensors on the front of the boat to let you know when you need to hang on to something because you're fixing to hit it.
Dale, you have such a way with words.
right.
Yeah, the boat with airbags.
With a buddy of mine, we have a flat boat, and you know, for bay fishing and such. And all of a sudden, he's like, "Hey, we're gonna pull up to this this pylon over here." And you know, next thing we're going up, we're cruising up to it, and we're going up pretty fast. And he slows the engine down, you know, basically to an idle, and we're still moving pretty fast. And he goes, "Okay." You know, my brother's on the front of the boat saying, "Hey, turn, stop, you know, and Clyde, guy driving, says, "I ain't got reverse." You know, and next thing, wham, man, we slam into this pillar, you know, and I'm like, "You could have went beside it, you know, you didn't have to aim right at it, man."
Only you, Dan.
Oh, they get angry at me because, you know, fishing is all feel, and, you know, when you're fishing, we've got, an advantage over the sighted folks, unless you're fishing, you know, with a bobber on top, but, you know, fishing deep, because we have that sense of feel that they don't have.
Yeah.
I wrote an article.
I mean, they had the boat turn one time where they had me fishing on the bank. That wasn't right, just because I was out fishing them.
Dale, I wrote an article about fishing bobbers and, you know, my research on fishing bobbers that are accessible. And one guy wrote in, he's an engineer, and he said he loves to read, and he loves to read when he's out fishing, so he invented himself something called the Lazy Fisherman, and it was a beeping bobber. And he said, well, he didn't think there'd be much demand for it, because he didn't think there was many fishermen as lazy as he was.
Right.
So he never pursued it, but now he read my article, and now he's going to go back to the drawing table and build me a couple of these lazy
Fantastic.
Fishermen.
Well,
I mean, before I lost my sight, I've seen them that had lights in them, you know, for night fishing and such, you know, and of course when it disappeared, that'd be great. But yeah, a beeping bobber would be awesome.
Well, I think that you guys are going to have to get in touch with each other because Dale's just getting way too excited here.
Yeah, man, I'm ready to go bait a hook now.
Yeah.
You've got to come up to Canada and we'll take you into some of the backwoods and take you to some real outdoor adventure.
That
fishing.
Sounds wild. Now, I don't know if I want to go on the gravel road walking trip, you know.
Yeah, you just want to go where it's warm and you can drink your margaritas. I know
you. Yeah, that is right. I am allergic to weather below 50 degrees.
There you go.
All right. Well, hey, it was great talking to you, Lawrence, Marlena. Let everybody know I'm still alive. We're still here.
All right, Mr. Campbell, I've been wondering where you were. You know, it's not a Sunday if I don't hear from you, and I haven't heard from you in a while, so I'm glad you're back.
All right,
and you take care, and we'll be looking for a Cooking in the Dark this week.
Cooking in the Dark.
All right, my dear. Bye-bye. Well, it's just about wrap-up time. Wow, I can't believe it. This hour flew, didn't it?
Oh, you know, you start telling the fishing stories, right?
And then there you go. There you were, and then you are. You know, I want to, I'm going to let you go here in just a second, but I asked many of my guests this question, and I feel like I'd like to lay it on you as well. If we've got someone listening who is someone who pretty much is afraid to push that envelope and afraid to try, what would you say to them to maybe give them a little bit more, oh, I don't know, courage or daring to try something new?
Well, you know, fishing is a community sport. And if you're listening to this right now, you probably have a computer, and you know how to use your computer. You should do a little Google search, type in the name of your city or town, and type in fishing, and maybe the words forum, and see what pops up, because you might be surprised. There might be a little group of fishermen who are, you know, having a little internet website where they share information and so on, and get a hold of one of them, let them know who you are, let them know that you'd like to go fishing, and I'm sure you'll get one of them, maybe, to take you out fishing and try it out. It's just, it really is a community sport. There's nothing better than sitting with a bunch of good old boys and gals and in a boat or along the bank and spending the day just pursuing, you know, some outdoor activity, getting that fresh air that's on your face.
Well, Lawrence Utenier, I so appreciate your having joined us this week. I do want to schedule, when your season calms down and our Sundays can match, another program. I would love to talk with you about the native populations and stories like you and your friend Sam. And I just, you know, that's a fascinating realm to me. And I would love to bring you back on, if only for my own entertainment. I think I would really enjoy it. And I also want you to come back on and talk with us about dragon boat racing. We never did get to that. So you're just a man of many facets, and you have not heard the last from me.
Marlene, I look forward to actually meeting you in person someday, and keep up the great show. Great work.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and you have a wonderful evening.
Thanks,
Marlena. Thanks, Lawrence. This program is brought to you by HumanWare, advocates for Braille literacy and manufacturers of the Braille Note M-Power. For more information on the Braille Note and other fine HumanWare products, visit them on the web at www.humanware.com or call HumanWare at 1-800-722-3393.
You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. Call Marlena now at 1-866-666-7926. That's toll free, 1-866-666-7926.
Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page at www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. Alrighty, your listening is definitely our business, and our business is your listening. And my business is to tell you right now that I actually have the next guest in my studio, which is a messy office. And Gary the Board Guy's coming in, yes?
You need to turn off your screen reader.
Oh, I do?
Yes, you do.
Oh, I put the wrong... Oh, my goodness gracious. I wonder how I did that.
I was not going to say a word, but I
left you should have.
To the board guy, because that's his job.
You are a cheat. You're a cheat, Chris Gray. And, Chris, I need you to come up to your mic just a wee bit more.
All right.
There, that's better.
That is so up to my mic that I could get electrocuted.
Well, I'm going to turn you up just a little bit. There we go. I think that's better.
Okay, very good.
Oh, yeah. Now, listening to you in headphones is a different kind of experience. I better be careful. Marvelena might be listening.
No, she's out to dinner. She's totally ignoring our show.
Oh, then we can just do anything we want, can't we? My guest in the second hour is Chris Gray, a voice that is, I know, familiar to many, and certainly a name known by many. Chris is the past president of the American Council of the Blind. And what are you the CEO of Bay Area Digital? Because I made you that, if you're not.
Well, I know you did, and I thank you for that. I never have used that term yet. In my emails, I'm like Christopher Gray, president, and and I've never used CEO, but I like it.
Well, I think it, you know, it's classy. Well, I was so impressed with what I saw at CSUN that I want to talk about that. Let me let folks know that the lines are open, 866-666-7926. But before we talk about what I saw at CSUN, maybe there are some folks who don't know what the heck is Bay Area Digital.
Well, Bay Area Digital is a company which has gone through a few transformations over time. Early on, we were a partnership, and our focus at that time was recording audiobooks of authors reading their own works. And we had some great authors. We had Wallace Stegner, Mary Clairman Blue, William Vollman, a number of other, very famous,
yes,
20th century authors. Well, that was great. It was fun, and it worked out very well for a while. But then, due to our partnership changes and so forth, the company went dormant and came back to life, really, in 1999. We sold Braille displays. We did a lot of work customizing environments for people's employment opportunities, and did that in as much as we could, even though I had a full-time job and so forth.
Yes, you actually, I'm using the very Vario you sold me right here, right in front of me.
Very good, very good.
It's like a tank. It never dies. It just goes and goes and goes.
You know, I've had my Vario since 1999, and it is such a workhorse.
Yeah.
But anyway, in 2005, I knew that in time I wanted to leave Symantec and kind of the dot-com rat race. And so I recreated Bay Area Digital into an LLC, found some like-minded people to be a part of it in a very small way, and we began developing medical equipment that talks in 2006. I'm almost embarrassed to say, but I'm excited also to say, in 2008 we're almost ready to market some products. I've worked in the blindness system. I've worked for Telesensory and with other companies. I know how long it takes to bring a product to market, but I really thought I could do better. And maybe I am doing better in a way, but my gosh, I mean, it is such a struggle to bring medical products onto the market. We're getting close, and I hope by the end of the year, in fact, I pray by the end of the year that we're going to have products on the market.
Why is it a struggle? What happens?
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, let's talk first about, my flagship product, blood glucose meters.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that blind diabetics are so in need of accessible blood glucose meters. Some work has been done in the area. There have been prodigies released and so forth. Many, many years ago, there was the AccuCheck, which was fine for its time, but is discontinued today. When you go to create a product like that, even though what you're adding is an adjunct, in my case, to an existing product, we've tied our fortune, really, in a way, to Abbott Diabetes Care. They make the best blood glucose meter on the market today, I believe. They've worked with us. They've helped us. They've supported us in many, many ways. But at the end of the day, even though we have a fully functional computer-based product and we have a standalone product that will allow you to use an Abbott Diabetes Care meter with a sound box attached to it, we still have to go through the FDA approval process. And that is not easy. It is very expensive. It takes a long time. And if we can get it done by the end of 2008, I'll be amazed. But maybe we can. I mean, and my goal is to do that.
So it's really a lot of red tape that you have to jump through and sort of things that you have to make sure that you comply with from the FDA.
Right.
Before you can actually get the thing into the marketplace. Now, how do you apply for research grants? How do you stay alive while you do all this?
Well, that isn't easy either. I'm working right now under a research grant for the National Science Foundation, and that will be a 6-month grant. I'm hoping that we can get that grant extended for another 1.5 to 2 year period.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we probably can. Everything is pointing very positively in that direction, and let's hope that it works out. As far as red tape, you know, you're right, but I would not say it's necessarily red tape. You know, the FDA wants to see, for example, the drawings for your internal boards for the product. They want to have it evaluated and have some faith that what you're creating is viable to really serve the medical needs of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
People who really have health issues and need significant assistance in resolving them.
Mm-hmm.
As much of a pain as it is, I don't resent it. On the other hand, you know, it costs thousands of dollars to submit every item for approval, for analysis. You've got to hire independent companies to help you do this. It's not an easy process.
And this, of course, is all part of the development cost. And, you know, sometimes even though I'm not really now in the technology industry, although I do consult on various things, but sometimes I hear people say, oh, this technology is just too expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, and I do think the technology is costly. Yes, that's it. I can't argue that. But I think what people often may not have a grasp on is just what you're talking about, the thousands of dollars of development money that you don't see back. I mean, you know, they don't pay you back, say, oh, yeah, it was good, here's your money back, it all worked, you know.
Well, right, exactly. I mean, there's the board issue, and it's a very important issue. In fact, you know, in a way, I would even say that I welcome the FDA being involved, examining my apparatus, so to speak, my boards, and making sure that they believe that they're adequate. Then there's the software. The software has to be evaluated by a third party. It has to be approved. You have to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that within, you know, it depends on the device, but 1,000, 10,000, 50,000 operations work without a flaw.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
The people I sell to have the right to know that we have passed those tests.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, to hire those companies to pass those tests, to get FDA to believe and agree that we passed those tests, it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It does not happen all by itself.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the products. We know about your flagship product, but there's something else up your sleeve.
Well, there is.
Yes.
In fact, there is. Thank you for mentioning that.
And right now, it could actually be one of my dogs.
Well, one of your dogs is here, and we're petting
her,
and
she's being visited sweetheart. I'm being visited by Agnes. You're being visited by Madeline. What the heck?
One's all in the earphones now. Anyway, you know, my flagship product is exciting. And as I say, I've tied my star, in a sense, to Abbott Diabetes Care for good reason. This company is so focused on providing state-of-the-art technology. The blood glucose meter that we have today does not require calibration for your strips. It is very small. You could carry it. You could carry two of them in your shirt pocket if you're a guy, or, you know, two or three in your purse if you, you know, get your DKNY styling purse and go on from there for the ladies in the audience. It's very small. And what we've done is attach that meter to a small sound box with a few buttons on it to create the accessibility portion of the product. And we will make this meter 100% accessible to you and other meters down the road, other products down the road as we proceed. But at the same time, there is a new market of products, a whole new area of product development going on, and for lack of a better word, let me describe it as the telehealth market.
The telehealth market?
Telehealth.
What is that?
Well, what it really signifies is think about a telephone, think about your health, think about using a monitor or a series of monitors and the phone to record your health and to create for your doctor, your set of doctors, whatever, a health profile for you from day to day. So, as an example, you're a diabetic and you want your doctor to be aware of your glucose readings 2, 3, 4 times a day, even for some people 6 or 8 times a day. You use your meter. Your meter is attached to an external box, and that box records every blood glucose measurement you take and feeds it onto a website that your doctor can then access and look at. Or even more importantly, that website, if it sees irregular behavior, erratic activity, a dangerous level, signals a nurse, signals your doctor that this patient may be in trouble. You need to be in touch with them right away. That is really what telehealth is all about today.
Fascinating.
It's, you know, I feel like Bay Area Digital has a tiger by the tail at this point because it's an emerging market. It's one we don't know much about. I was speaking to a friend of mine recently, and he has had open-heart surgery. He's a diabetic, and he has a scale. His scale is connected to a phone line, and he weighs himself in the morning and in the night, and that weight is transmitted to his clinic every day. He's got a target weight, and everybody knows what his goals may be. They also know if the weight spirals up or spirals down, that they may need to contact him with regard to a health crisis. Well, his device is, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4 years old. The device that Bay Area Digital is using is a very new device developed in Scandinavia, brought out experimentally at the end of 2007. And with this device, which Bay Area Digital has been able to make speak, all the menus speak, even the service menus speak, the factory menus speak. It is a beautiful environment, and if you're blind, if you're a health professional, you can use this device as a health professional. If you're a person in need of assistance with your health, you can use this box absolutely on your own. We can access four different kinds of blood glucose meters. We can access blood pressure meters, scales, oximeters, peak flow meters, EKG machines, and all of that is available to you as a blind person to hear your level, to hear your reading, and to store on the internet and be able to access all of that data in a way that you can use yourself or your clinic, your doctor, your nurse, all of your health professionals can use at the same time.
That's amazing. We have a call. Let's bring them on in. Hi there. You're with Chris and Marlena. Who's this?
Hey there. This here is Danny.
Hello, Danny.
And I've got a question for you. Just tuned in.
Mm-hmm.
I have, well, it's a two-part question, and what I can do is ask them and then get off the air if you wish. At some point during the broadcast, are you going to give Lawrence's website?
Oh, actually, he did, but I will again. It's blindfishingboat.com.
Okay. And the second is this. I would like to know, I've got a meter recently. It's called the, I think it's called the Prodigy Voice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this the same thing as what you have, or how is it different?
No, the Prodigy Voice is a different meter, and I think Prodigy Voice is a very good meter, and I would recommend anyone today who needs to use a meter, use Prodigy Voice. It's really all that is out there that is FDA approved, and you know, I give my wholehearted support to that meter right now. I don't want anything that I would say to sound otherwise. The meter that I'm bringing out is a significant improvement on the Prodigy Voice. And the most important improvement is the amount of blood that is required for a test.
Because I noticed, now maybe I'm just I've just started testing, and my diabetes, thank goodness, is not that severe. Okay.
Good, good.
But it is a little frustrating because I tried twice today to take my blood, and unless you get the blood right on that exact place.
Oh, I know.
So how do you envision yours might work? Of course, I realize things are subject to change, but how do you envision yours working compared to this?
Well, you've raised an issue which a person who has never tested doesn't necessarily understand. There's no doubt, and we can all understand, that if you've got a meter and you put a test strip in the meter, you want to hear the result of your test. That's critical. What people don't realize is that for a severely visually impaired diabetic.
I have no vision whatsoever. I'm totally blind.
Or a totally blind diabetic. You're right. Exactly. What people don't realize is that it is equally difficult to get the blood on the strip at the right place as it is to get a meter that will give you the result of the test of that blood.
And one thing I should add real quick, one thing I absolutely despise is that this meter theoretically is for alternate site testing, but the problem is if you're blind and you test on your arm or wherever,
right,
how the heck are you going to get the blood right on that spot?
Well, I know. So,
I almost have to use my fingers. I'm kind of locked into that.
Well, yes, you are. Bay Area Digital has a solution, and we're waiting for a patent on this. The solution is this, that imagine a small plastic device you would put on your finger or maybe on your arm, and once you place it on the finger or the arm, there is a slot. You move the strip into the slot, then the strip moves down, falls right down through the slot, and touches the very same place you lanced yourself. What that means is it gets the blood. One test provides your result, and you're in good shape.
In other words, as far as you know, all I would have to do is, as carefully as possible, put the element right over the test sign.
Right, right.
And I've actually seen this little device. I need to do some audio adjusting here. There we go. I've actually seen this little device, and it's I think going to be quite effective. Now, Chris, is that something once you do get it patented that you'll sell individually to people?
Yes, I will. Yes, I will. I'm going to put out a kit for users of Prodigy, of Advantage, and of MyMeter, and in that kit will be a box of lancing devices, a lancet, and a guide. So what you would do, you'd put the guide on your finger or your arm, or if you wish, on your thigh. You lance yourself, and then you slide the strip down this tiny, tiny hole, and it takes the blood, gives you a reading. And it's, you know, it's not one step, but you won't have to measure your blood 3, 4, 5 times to get a reading that you believe is right.
And you won't have to touch it with your fingers.
And the one thing, no. The one thing I think would really be remarkable, I read an article, and I'm going to let you go. I read an article a couple of years, maybe a year ago. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, the device never materialized. It would have been a device that could have measured your blood sugar without a needle.
You know, everybody who is diabetic and everybody in the industry would love a the technical word is non-invasive device.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in this work now for 5 years.
And why don't we all make it just simple English words, a no-stick device?
Well, okay, a no-stick device.
But I know what you mean.
That's
it's just
fine.
Funny how we use these huge... oh, by the way, do you have a website by chance?
Yes, I do.
Well, hang on. Let Chris finish his response non-stick device, and then he can give you his website.
Okay, great.
Go ahead, Chris.
So I've studied this now for 5 years, and every year I go to lectures, I talk to physicians, I talk to the people who are developing diabetic equipment. Every year they say, within 10 years, I know we're going to have a non-invasive, non-stick device. And while I believe that's true, and there's some amazing work being done in that area, down in Palo Alto and, you know, here in the Bay Area, it is not going to happen soon. I wish it would, because believe me, I'm a diabetic myself. I know the difficulty of poking yourself and so forth. But there's great work going on. For example, there is a new device which uses a motor to run a needle and so forth. And poke you and get a blood sample. It is nothing like what we experienced 5, 10, 15 years ago. So, you know, progress is on the way. And believe me, by the end of the year, you're going to see a meter from Bay Area Digital that meets many of the needs that you are worried about today. The Prodigy is a good meter, though. Use the Prodigy and learn as much as you can about it, and we'll go from there as the months go on.
And what's your website?
The website, www.bayareadigital.us.
All right.
Okay. Thank you for everything.
There you go, Danny.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. You're listening to the Marlena program. It's just about half past the hour, and we've
already?
Got a... Already?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
We haven't even gotten the telehealth.
I know.
Okay.
We have another call. Hi there. You're with Marlena and Chris. Who's this?
Good evening, everybody.
It's Dr. Bishop.
Is that Mr. Jeff Bishop I hear?
It is I, yes.
It is the very
Jeff,
one.
Jeff, how are you?
Hey, Jeff.
I am well.
Hey, Jeff, since it's you, can you hang on 1 minute? I want to run some spots.
Sure, of course.
I mean, it's only you. Hang on.
Only
we'll
me.
We'll all be right back.
Very good.
This program is brought to you by HumanWare, advocates for Braille literacy, and manufacturers of the Braille Note M-Power. For more information on the Braille Note and other fine HumanWare products, visit them on the web at www.humanware.com or call HumanWare at 1-800-722-3393.
You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. Call Marlena now at 1-866-666-7926. That's toll-free, 1-866-666-7926.
Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page, www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business.
Oh, Chris Gray is really trouble to have in the studio. Let's bring Jeff back in. All right, Jeff, thanks for...
Oh, we had a good time on those commercial breaks.
Yeah, we did.
Yes,
we certainly did. What's up with you, Dr. Bishop?
Oh, not much. I had a question about the new device coming out at the end of the year.
Yes, go
okay.
for it.
One of the issues that I have a tendency to have a problem with, and I don't know if this will solve it or not, it sounds like it might, is not necessarily positioning the strip, but the blood running. You know, meaning after you're stuck, the blood running down your finger.
Yeah,
instead of
yes.
having to chase it.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Boy, this is a hard thing to explain. For those who have never done a blood sugar test, let me say that you may lance yourself with this device. It's a spring-loaded thing.
Yeah, it's like
you
a
hold it against your finger, and you push a button, and it goes bang on your finger, and creates a flow of blood. Well, if you do it just a tiny bit, there isn't enough blood. If you do it like at the most heavy setting, there's too much blood. Years and years ago, it used to be that you had to provide your blood glucose strip with a hanging drop of blood. That's gone away, and now you've got to provide just a tiny spot of blood, maybe 0.05 microliters, maybe 0.08. In the case of my meter that will be coming out soon, it's 0.03, and maybe even less with a newer device that I am not really able to tell you about tonight. But anyway, Jeff, I would say back off your lancet.
Okay. No, that's good. I just was curious if if the guard would trap the blood in, you know, in this.
If you're getting blood running on your finger, and you can't quite get it with your strip, I'd back off a notch.
Okay. Yeah, it's one of those. I've done that, and it's one of those. I don't, you know, my fingers are now tough.
Yeah, I know.
Obviously,
I know.
And
people don't realize. For those of us who test, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a day, over time, your finger does get calloused. It gets tougher. It's hard to get the blood. And
how do you read Braille? Things, how do you read Braille, though, you guys?
Well, you do it on the side of your finger. You never never use the pad. For one thing, it hurts too damn much. Oh, too darn much.
Oh, God.
Oh, my word. But no.
Either that or you use your pinkies if you're going to do that.
Well, yeah. But also, you know, today with alternate site testing, use your forearm, not on the bone, a fleshy part of your forearm. Hmm. You can go up and down the forearm, you know, and get a lot of different test sites. And you can use your thigh as well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. All right. Okay, thanks.
All right, Dr. Jeff. Bishop. Hey, what's coming up on main menu this week before I let you go?
Exactly.
Well, let's see. The first hour we're going to do our CSUN review, and then Dave Williams is coming on in the second hour.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
That coming up. So
all right.
I've got to talk to Dave. I want to buy a 920, a Nextel 920, and use it. It runs mobile speak.
Yep.
Maybe use it with his software.
Now, what would be really cool is if you could use Bluetooth with a meter and get mobile speak to speak your readings from the meter to Bluetooth.
That would be nice. Yes, it would.
Hmm.
So think about that. See, there, you could add that to your patent, and then you could send me a check.
After he sends me one.
Okay, we'll see you guys later.
All right, you take care, Dr. Bishop.
Take care, Jeff.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. My guest tonight is Chris Gray, and we are talking in the second hour of the Marlena program about some of the innovations that his company, Bay Area Digital, is working on. My guest next week will be Dennis Shulman. Dennis is a gentleman running for Congress from a district in New Jersey. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Dennis happens to be totally blind.
I'm dying to hear that presentation.
Oh, my gosh. He's a fabulous...
That is going to be hot.
He's a fabulous speaker. He's I hate to call him an inspirational speaker because that can have negative connotations. But if you don't feel like you've been inspired to get up and motivate, you're dead listening to Dennis.
How many of the real leaders in the blindness movement have tried, and some have succeeded, some have failed, to be representatives in their states or in Congress?
Exactly. All right, we have another call. Let's bring him on in, and then I want to talk about telehealth. But let's bring this caller in. Hello there. You're with Chris and Marlena. Who's this?
Good evening, Marlena. Good evening, Chris.
It's Stan the Man from Oregon.
But
formerly from the Bay Area.
Hey, Stan.
You know, you really bring something home, and I have to tell you a little bit of a story. Some of my family members are diabetic, and fortunately, hopefully I won't be, but I have a feeling I will be. But at any rate, we have a group of friends that always go. I'm on the board of a transportation district here, and we have a group of people that go to meetings. What happened is one day one of our friends had contacted the person and couldn't get an answer at the door. The person was a diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
The person had passed out on the bathroom floor.
Oh, dear.
And was there for several hours.
Oh, my gosh.
And had it not been for the three of us always keeping in touch with each other, one of the people that went there found out what had happened. She couldn't get inside the door, and they were taking paratransit. They called me. I called her husband from that worked at one local car dealership. Had it not been for all of us working together, this person may not be with us, because she's had several episodes where she would pass out in her sugar juice. Mm-hmm. They were taking medicines that were, you know, not controlling the sugar. It'd be, you know, and that just, I thought about that because of what Chris mentioned earlier. And it was so terrible because we had this team, all of us watching out for each other,
mm-hmm.
and had
mm-hmm.
it not been for that, this person now that's the diabetic I mentioned is now on kidney dialysis.
Wow. That is so intense.
A scary time.
You know, and there are two really significant events that can occur. And let me, not to be self-promotional, but let me tell you a bit about how we're addressing those at Bay Area Digital. One is, if your blood sugar goes too low, the ideal is from 80 to 120. Our bodies can absorb a lot of variation. And so if you go to 70, maybe you're in trouble. And you need some advice. Our meter will give you advice at 70. It'll give you advice, different advice, at 60. And if you're below 60, it will command you to call your health care professional immediately. Because if you don't, you will probably pass out, and you will probably not be able to really know what to do.
I have to
now at the high end.
Oh, sorry.
You go, you know, even if you go as high as 350, you probably are mentally okay. If you exceed 350, again, you need to be in touch with someone to help you immediately, not tomorrow, not next week, right now. And if you're over 400, you need to call an ambulance. Really. I mean, it's that severe. So in our meter, we have these kinds of guidance programmed, and people will be told, you know, do this, do that, within reason. But you're right. It's a really, really big problem.
One other thing I need to add, and this is something for future people to think about, and I know I heard it talked about recently. She had a small dachshund, and her dachshund would freak out and start acting real weirdly.
Mm-hmm.
And she has gotten to the point where if it does act strangely, she checks her sugar, and more than likely, more times than not, it will be telling her that her sugar is out of whack, that she
wow.
needs to do something. And
how cool.
That's strange.
Wow, that is amazing. I mean, I've you know, heard of dogs doing many things, and seizure dogs and
mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
forth. So it's not,
yep.
and
yep.
even there are dogs that they've been using to sniff out breast cancer.
Well, I know that I heard a story in the news about a week and a half ago about dogs being trained, that some of them were being trained for diabetic, related dog, you know, sort of like,
mm-hmm.
Sort of like hearing and sight dog, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, I wish you the best of luck on your endeavors.
Thank you.
And hopefully everything will come to fruition in a timely manner, which I know won't be soon enough, but, you know, maybe in the next year, we'll be hearing about Bay Area Digital and saying, gee, I know, I recognize the person who did this.
There you go.
Have
there
a good
go.
Evening,
thank
everyone.
You so much.
All right, Stan, thanks a lot. Take care. 866-666-7926. Telehealth.
Telehealth may be the most expanding part of our market today in medical care. It used to be that a nurse would come by and visit, or that you would go to your doctor every quarter and provide data. Today, a burgeoning number of medical devices can be brought to bear on a person's health. They connect to a single box. The box connects to the web, to some way of recording that data, and your whole health profile can be engineered, can be, you know, recorded, worked on, and your doctor can help you with your medication, everything you need. And what I'm excited about for blind people is your health profile can be available to you every day. So if your weight is skyrocketing, if your blood pressure is not what it ought to be, if your blood sugar is wrong, you can see all those things and control all of those things by your lifestyle, your diet, your medication, anything that you can do to create a profile that guarantees good health. Late in 2007, I became aware of this amazing little box, and it's got a screen with various contrasts. It has infrared, Bluetooth, and serial communication built in the box. It has telephone connectivity in the box, and it has the ability to speak. The readings of your major medical devices to allow you to work with the menus in the box to give you reminders, to allow you to use the devices, and it is probably the most amazing thing in healthcare for the blind I've seen for a long time. As I said before, you can use up to 4 different blood glucose meters with this box. You can use 2 or 3 different blood pressure meters. I'm showing only one right now. A couple different scales. I'm showing one. You can use an oximeter, a peak flow meter, even an EKG machine.
Let's tell people what oximeters and peak flow meters are.
Well, you tell about peak flow meters. You know that,
yeah,
as well as I do, if not better.
Yeah. Oximeters and peak flow meters are things that save the life of severe asthmatics like me, actually.
They truly do.
And I can give you an example of that. You all know I didn't do my show for a couple of weeks because I had some very minor hand surgery. Very, very minor. However, my asthma does not think anything that happens to my body is minor. And therefore, my asthma took over, and my oxygen level, you know, you should carry about a 96, 97, you know, the closer to 100% blood oxygen you're getting, the better you are. Well, I live at 92. Just, you know, just on a day-to-day basis. That's good for me. It was down in the low, in the mid-60s. And
wow.
I had no way.
That is low.
That's dangerously low. Mm-hmm. I mean, you die. But I had no way to know that until, because I had nothing that's accessible to me. And fortunately, you know, Gary, the board guy, has the site, and so he was able to monitor my oxygen, and even with the oxygen turned on at 5 liters, which is a hefty amount.
Yes, it is.
The highest I was getting for over a week was 82. So if I didn't know that, you know, I could have died. Now, a peak flow meter for an asthmatic is something that helps you test your ability to exhale. And so you literally puff, into this meter and see how far you can push a little ball along in its sort of track. And, you know, you need to establish your own kind of minimums and maximums so you can determine whether or not your asthma is in fact about to kick up. And, that's totally inaccessible to both of these devices are totally inaccessible to blind folks.
There has never been an accessible version of either of these devices. And today, that is something we can offer. And I'm pretty proud about that.
I can't wait to have it.
Well, and, you know, and Marlena, I thank you and Melody Brunson and others who brought this whole aspect of healthcare to our attention. We knew about the diabetic issues and the blood pressure issues, but the breathing issues, they're becoming more and more important all the time, and we've actually now got a mechanism to address that. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, when I tested the oximeter at CSUN, I was so excited.
That was great.
I wanted to
You put that little tag on your finger
and, it said,
and got it up there, and within 30 seconds, it gave your oxygen level, and that was wonderful.
My oxygen level and my heart rate, and they were both correct because it said 92. Yeah.
The reason I'm in Seattle now is to attend the annual American Telehealth Conference. And people are coming here to be certified in telehealth. There's probably over 150 booths tomorrow that we can go visit, telling us about all the products in this area. And I just can't believe the business is as big as it is. We kind of stumbled on it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, this isn't quite telehealth, but I recently sent you something about a USB pregnancy test kit.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, if there's a USB test kit, it's got to talk. We got to make it talk. Yeah.
Well, I think there would be a lot of our members who would be interested in that. And also, you mentioned to me the talking first aid kit.
Oh, yes, yes,
and I've,
yes,
I've
yes,
ordered
yes,
one.
Yes,
it
yes.
It isn't here yet.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it's got 9 different packs in it. One is for burns. One is for bleeding. There are 7 others. And you open those up, and there's a module in there that talks you through not only the use of the products in the module, but what you need to know about helping someone who is having severe bleeding or whatever their situation might be.
And that would be a perfect thing to put in our disaster survival kits, wouldn't
it? Yes,
it
would.
Yeah.
Yes, it would.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to have a booth at the ACB convention this summer. It'll be the Bay Area Digital booth, and I would encourage everyone to come by there. We're going to have a talking first aid kit. We'll show the telehealth monitor with blood pressure meter, oximeter, et cetera, and give you a real opportunity to touch and experience ways to improve your health.
So I can come by and take my oxygen levels and I don't have to
every
bug Gary.
Day.
Oh,
every
Gary
day.
Will love that.
Not only that, you know, we're working very, very hard. To me, another area is equipment, exercise equipment. We all know that you can help your issues with diabetes. You can help your issues with breathing if you combine them with exercise. But how can we do that when there is not one product on the market today that tells you, you know, here's how to use the bike or here's how to ramp up your treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
we are at a total loss in this area. So we're working on that as well, and my hope is that by the end of this year, early next year, we can have really total health solutions for blind and visually impaired Americans.
Well, I hope so too, and I you know, I have a treadmill here, and one of the reasons that I sort of use it and I sort of don't use it, but you know, I can't program it.
I know.
It's like, get on that thing. And
you want to go from level one to level two.
That's right.
You want some data to be recorded.
That's
about,
right.
You know, what have I done today? How many calories have I burned? We have no access to that today.
And my treadmill, even, you can hook it up in somehow or other, and I've never done it, but you can go online and it'll talk to something. And
the ability is there. The accessibility is not.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask you a question. You spoke earlier, and we've just got a couple of minutes left, but I'd like you to clarify something. We spoke earlier about you having a scale. Well, big deal. There's bazillions of talking scales out there.
Oh, my gosh.
Why is yours such a big deal?
You have raised one of my great stories. Thank you for doing that. You know, the telehealth monitor that I'm using interfaces with Bluetooth scales. There are several of those around, and I found a sales rep and got an AND Bluetooth scale. We chatted, and I told the guy what I was doing and what Bay Area Digital was all about. And I said, you know, the problem I have is that my potential customers, blind people, are used to buying kind of cheap talking scales, and I'm going to have to really wow them with a product to pay $250 for a Bluetooth talking scale.
Well, wow us quickly.
So he said, you know, I don't know how you can do that exactly, but let me tell you about my scale. My scale is so cool. You're not going to believe this. A, it can weigh people up to 450 pounds. Okay, I think that's pretty good. And I thought to myself, well, there's probably some blind folks who need that. But maybe, you know, I said, well, that's great. Thank you. He said, but here's the kicker. I will give you this as my guarantee. You step on my scale. Weigh yourself, step off, drink a glass of water or a bottle of water, and step on, and you will know how much that glass of water weighed. If that isn't true, I'll give you all your money back.
Wow, that's a pretty fantastic...
Marlena, we're talking about medical grade, pharmaceutical grade equipment in the hands of blind people.
And that is something we have never had. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for coming on in the second hour. And,
well, thank you.
I'm going to invite you back so that you can continue to give us updates on Bay Area Digital. And on behalf of everyone who will hear this, thank you so much for all that you are doing. You are a great humanitarian, and
well, thank you very much.
I deeply appreciate that. My guest in the second hour has been Chris Gray, a familiar voice to ACB Radio, a longtime friend of mine. Next week, don't forget, Dennis Shulman, running for Congress in New Jersey. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he just happens to be blind.
How about that?
There you go.
Talk.
Yeah, he's great. I'm Marlena. Glad you were able to be with us tonight. And come on back next week to the Marlena program right here on ACB Radio at the Mainstream.